Do you grab a seat? We're going to have our reading now. And it's up here on the screen. It's on your sheets or on the screen. Or you may want to just follow along by listening and watching, because some of the parts are going to be acted out as I read it. So I'm going to be narrator, and some other people will chime in with some other bits. So Matthew chapter 28 from verse 1. After the Sabbath, as Sunday morning was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. Suddenly, there was a violent earthquake. An angel of the Lord came down from heaven, rolled the stone away, and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid that they trembled and became like dead men. The angel spoke to the women.
"Do not be afraid. I know that you seek Jesus who is crucified. He is not here, for he has risen from the dead, as he said. Come, see the place where he lay. Now go quickly and tell his disciples that he has risen from the dead. And behold, he is going before you to Galilee. There you will see him. Remember these things that I have told you."
So they left the tomb in a hurry, afraid and yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly, Jesus met them.
"Peace be with you."
They came up to him, took hold of his feet, and worshipped him.
"Do not be afraid,"
Jesus said to them.
"Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there they will see me."
Thank you very much. We'll press pause. Thank you, actors. We're going to cover the whole chapter, Matthew 28, but we're going to do it in three different sections, and that is section one. And after each one, I'm going to try and explain a little bit about what was going on in the verses. Now, question for the children as we begin. You may know that in the Bible, the account of Jesus, the stories of Jesus, there were four different versions of them. And some of the children might even know what they were called. Four writers named after men's names. Does anyone know what they are? I'll give you a clue. First one is Matthew. Yeah. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, spot on. So there's these four stories. Actually, a lot of what is in the stories is the same. In fact, they've all got a bit about what happens that we're looking at today, about Jesus busting out of the tomb. They've all got a bit about an empty tomb. They've all got a bit about people seeing the risen Jesus. But each one of them tells the story a little bit differently. And today we're looking at Matthew's account, and we're going to try and hear what Matthew wants us to hear, what he tries to draw attention to. Children, you're going to need your service sheets, because I'm going to ask you a question about the verses on the sheets. Have you got a sheet? If you have, there's a little bit here, verses 2 to 4, which you'll only find in Matthew's gospel. And I want you to tell me the sorts of things that are different in Matthew's gospel that are in verses 2 to 4. So anything you see in verses 2 to 4, should we could put it up, couldn't we? Yell it out. What happened in those verses? Hands up. I'm going to have to rely on some adults here because we need, yeah. There was an earthquake. So Matthew tells us there's a violent earthquake, which you don't get in any of the other gospels. Any other details? Yes, an angel came. So the other Gospels tell you that there was someone dressed in white. They don't mention much about who it was. Here we get it was an angel coming from heaven. And here we get what he dressed like, which you don't get this detail in all the others. What did he dress like? Yes.
His clothes
were
white.
Yes. His appearance was like
lightning.
So it's very, very dramatic. And there's another thing, something about the guards that we don't get in the others. Yes. Yeah, we saw, didn't we? Sam was trembling and then he fell like a dead man. Now, the picture here is very dramatic. It would have been terrifying if you were there. The picture is like, you can imagine, you know, if this was movie-like, it would be like this meteor or something, you know, striking down from him, hitting the earth with a great bang, smashing into the earth like a heavenly invasion. And the tomb is opened. Matthew describes it as like, you know, a fortress being burst open with brute force. And the thing Matthew wants us to know about this event that he really underlines here is this is definitely God's doing. This is the sort of thing that has got his fingerprints all over it. It is the sort of thing only God can do. Now, I've got a picture here. God does what we could never do. And there is the angel sitting on top explaining. Okay, does anyone know of the children what... Yeah, we've got a hand already. Any other hands? What this... Ha-ha, yes. Batman! So if you see... well done, Jesse, spot on. If you saw this somewhere around, you would know, wouldn't you? Or at least Jesse would, that Batman had been doing whatever was going on that day. And everyone would go, oh yeah, yeah, Batman, obviously. Okay, here's another one. Jesse, I'm going to need you again. If you saw someone that was kind of tied up in web, what would that be the clue? It's not much harder. I thought it would be easier. Yeah, Jesse. Spider-Man! Yeah, if you saw someone like this, you'd be guess and you'd be right. That is his calling card. So those things tell you that that person has done whatever happened. And the point is that everything here in verses 2 to 4, an angel striking the earth, a terrifying experience, earthquakes, all of those are God's calling card. A bit like the throwing bat is Batman's calling card. When God shows up on the scene, this is what he always does. And so anyone can know, oh yeah, I know what's happened here. This is God's calling card. It tells us loud and clear. So what is this thing exactly that only God can do? That thing that requires an intervention from heaven and God to leave his calling card. And we get the answer in verse 6. This is what the angel announces. He's not here. He, Jesus, has risen. He is risen. You see, God does what we could never do. And the answer is, what does he do? Death has been beaten. And actually, children, you're going to have to fill in, if you've got a pen, the gaps on your sheets. God does what we could never do. And then the blanks, death has been beaten. So, children, the people we thought about at the beginning, remarkable, incredible people, the greatest scientists, richest billionaires, best sportsmen, greatest leaders. We thought already, this is what makes Jesus completely different from them. He's in a different category. I've represented Jesus as a cross there because I don't actually know, none of us know really what Jesus looked like, so I couldn't do a picture of him. But unlike the others who all had that tomb, they're all rotting in a grave somewhere. Jesus' life did not end like that. He's not rotting in a tomb somewhere in the Middle East. He defeated death once and for all, and I've put a crown there because he now rules the whole world. And actually, it is this event that we're celebrating today which divides history into two halves. Can anyone help me what these letters might stand for on the screen? Probably an older child. Yes, Jemima? Yes, do you want to do the other one? It's a bit harder, the other one, because it's in foreign. Does anyone know foreign? Flora? Anno Domini, that's right. Do you know what language? Yeah, it's in Latin. And we tend actually to think of Christmas as dividing the world into two chapters like this, BC and AD. I think actually, well, that's because our dating system does it that way. But I think if you ask the Bible, it's more likely the Bible would say Easter Day is the turning point. That is when the new chapter of history began. So the first chapter of history ended with a death. That's what we're thinking about on Good Friday. This is actually what human beings can do. We don't have a lot of power, but one thing human beings are pretty adept at is ending life. We kill. It happens all over the world every day. We kill. And when the Son of God came, we killed him. But it takes God to intervene for a new chapter to begin, because God does something which we could never do. And he began a whole new chapter of the world, not with a death, but with something that was uniquely from heaven, the reversal of a death, a resurrection. And God has launched a new era of history, and death has been beaten. And actually, this death being beaten is now an open invitation so that anyone can accept this victory over death if they join themselves to Jesus. Now, children, There are some things in life that cannot be easily fixed. Perhaps you've come across some of these things. Say, for example, we all get coughs and colds, tummy aches, that sort of thing. But you may know there are some illnesses that don't go away, that can't be fixed. Or, for example, we all know what it is to say goodbye. It's the end of term, you say goodbye to your friends. You know that in a couple of weeks or a few weeks, you'll see them again. It's a goodbye, but not a goodbye forever. But children, there are some goodbyes that are final. And actually, our family were saying a final goodbye to a much-loved family member at a crematorium this week. And there are some things that can't be easily fixed. And that is why it is such a relief to know what we're looking at today. I heard very recently about a woman. She had just got some terrible news that she wasn't going to live very long. She got an illness that was meant she was going to last just 1 or 2 months. Now, when people give bad news, you may have come across this, they normally end with a little sentence which tells you what makes that okay for them. So they say, this terrible thing happened to me, but, you know, worse things happen at sea. Some people use that one. Or this terrible thing happened, but mustn't grumble. Or they say, this terrible thing happened to me, but, you know, I'll be better in a week, or whatever it is. They usually add a phrase which gives the comfort that makes it okay. And this woman, she described what had happened to her, and she said, but it's nothing that a resurrection can't fix. And that is the comfort of today. We will face amongst us all kinds of sad things in 2019. And yet, I promise you, it's nothing that a resurrection can't fix. Whatever sadness, whatever things going on in our lives, this is why Easter Day is the best news it could be for all of us. And we need to celebrate that. We're going to sing now to celebrate. And our next song celebrates how not just the events that happen on that Easter day, but what a difference they make in our lives. Let's stand and sing together. Great. Do grab a seat. We're going to have the next stage of our reading. Again, it's going to be on the sheets or up there, or you can watch if you'd prefer. So let me begin Matthew 28 and from verse 11. While the women went on their way, some of the soldiers guarding the tomb went back to the city and told the chief priests everything that had happened. The chief priests met with the elders and made their plan. They gave a large sum of money to the soldiers and said,
"You are to say that his disciples came during the night while you were asleep and stole his body. And if the governor should hear of this, we'll convince him you're innocent. You'll have nothing to worry about."
The guards took the money and did what they were told to do. And so that is the report spread around by the Jews to this very day. So we're going to think about those verses now. We've already seen just a little recap that God has done what we could never do. You'll remember our first chapter, first section. Death has been defeated. Now we discover, this is part two, that some people reject that truth. Children, if you've got your sheets, that's the missing word that you need to fill in. Some people reject the truth. Now, there are two groups, did you notice, that rush away from the empty tomb. We've already seen one, as represented by this green arrow. The women, they rush away from the empty tomb. But children, do you remember, we just had in the reading, another group that ran away from the empty tomb? Got one hand here. The guards, was that? Yeah, it was the guards, as represented by this red line. So you've got these two groups, the women, the green line, and the soldiers, the red line. And actually, the way it's written, we're to compare these. There's lots that is very similar about them. They've both had a similar experience. They've both seen the angel arrive from heaven and experienced a violent earthquake. They've both seen the angel roll back the stone and sit on it. They've both seen him shining like lightning with white clothes. And we also discover they were both afraid. And something else they have in common, they both go off with a report, a true report, of what had happened. Now, actually, this is a very exciting moment, potentially, isn't it? Because they take their report back to HQ, to the chief priests in Jerusalem. They're the ones, if we'd been following the story all the way through, who hadn't responded, who hadn't believed Jesus is who he claims, and they were the ones responsible, actually, for getting Jesus killed. And so these chief priests are going to hear the truth, and they're going to hear this report, and they are going to know it can only mean one thing. It must mean that the God that they say they worship has reversed everything that they did to Jesus. God has turned around Jesus' death and brought him back to life. God has turned around Jesus' burial and opened up the tomb. And so the obvious response when these chief priests hear it, what are they going to do? Obviously, they should turn back to God. Of course they should. All they have to do is just admit they got it wrong, badly wrong, admit that Jesus really is God's son, and then just ask for God's forgiveness for sending Jesus to his death and start following him. This is a very exciting moment in the gospel story. But you know, because you just had the reading, that it doesn't go quite the way I explained. So the soldiers do their part. They go and tell the truth about what has happened. But when the chief priests, and Andrew was the grumpy chief priest there, when the chief priests hear about it, they're actually very angry. They don't like what they hear. They don't want to admit that they were wrong. They don't want to say they're sorry. They don't want to follow Jesus. Amazingly, they have got all this incredible evidence. They've seen Jesus again and again, seen his miracles, and then finally they've got this amazing evidence of the guard's report. But of course, they just don't like what they hear. And so what do? They reject it. They reject the truth. Except there's still a problem for the chief priests. I want children, if you can think about their problem. You see, the soldiers have told them an amazing thing that's happened. And I guess when amazing things happen, the soldiers are probably not going to keep that in, are they? I imagine already they've thought about who they're going to tell. They're just going to blurt away what's going to happen. And so the chief priests have got a problem, and they have to come up with a cunning plan. So children, can anyone tell me what the cunning plan, what the good idea, that, well, good for the chief priests, is? Yes, Ella. Yes, got it in one. They tell the guards to tell lies about what has happened. So they pay the soldiers. There's the pile of money. And the soldiers say, oh, I like this. And we heard the jingling money, didn't we, in the story. And so what the soldiers do is they change their story. And they change from a true story to a lying story. All it took was a big bag of money. And that was pretty easy. In fact, this is the chief priest's favorite way of acting. If we'd been reading all the way through Matthew, just a couple of chapters ago, they did almost the same thing with Judas. They paid him 30 pieces of silver to get exactly what they wanted. They know what is very powerful in this world is money, and they do the same thing with the soldiers. It's worth us noting this point about money. Money is a very powerful thing. You see, these chief priests have got a lot more money than the alternate gang. And so they're able to control the story. They're able to control the newspapers, the media. They have their hands on the levers of power. They control the news cycle. They can even pressure the courts if they need to. And so their message, their announcement, is the only one which gets any airtime. There's a saying which you might have, adults might have heard of, which is a lie can get halfway around the world before the truth even has got its shoes on. It's a funny saying, but it's pretty much accurate about what is going on here. You see, there's this lie. The chief priests have told the soldiers to tell a lie. Now, at this point in the story, the disciples haven't even seen the risen Jesus. And yet, even before they've seen him, let alone got told what their message has got to be, the lie has got out of the starting blocks in the race and is halfway around the world. The lie is very powerful and has got a massive head start. Now, children, if you would just excuse me for 2 minutes, I'm going to address adults. Often adults take a bit longer to process and to understand things, and so I'm going to give them 2 extra minutes, and then we'll come back in a minute. And the reason is, adults, I think some of us, I'm guessing, are thinking, when we see this, we're thinking, yeah, I can see there's 2 reports, but how can we be sure that we've got the truth? How can we be sure which one is the true one? Perhaps you've had that thought. And I want to say it is not a very difficult question. And I think it's not difficult for a couple of reasons. Firstly, if you think about the soldiers' message, it really doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. They claim to have gone asleep, but if they were asleep, how is it that they know not just that the body was stolen, but even which people stole it, as they claim? How can you do that if you're asleep? And the reason they know, if the reason they know the disciples stole it is because they woke up just as the disciples were doing it, well, why didn't the soldiers catch the disciples or at least retrieve the body? Surely it's not that hard, is it, for professional soldiers to catch someone who's carrying a big, heavy body? So the soldiers' story, whichever angle you look at it, it doesn't really make sense. It doesn't add up. So I think already we can see it's not a very persuasive account. Whereas, contrast it with the women's account and the disciples' account, having seen the risen Jesus a bit later. In particular, what else but rising from the dead explains the dramatic turnaround that happens to these disciples? From hiding for their dear life in a locked room, and then within weeks they're in the center of the city proclaiming at the top of their voices this incredible thing they've seen. And what else can explain that nearly all of them went to their deaths rather than going back on their story about seeing Jesus rise from the dead? People do not give their lives for something they know is a lie. So it's pretty clear to us which is the truth, and we should stand on it and be excited about the confidence we can have in the truth. Children, well done. We're back. I think the adults have caught up. Thank you for your patience. So we've seen, haven't we, that some people reject the truth. And children, just before we go on, I want us to think about what that truth means for us. Because I guess many of us will have had the experience of hearing of people who don't like Jesus. They dismiss him. They've perhaps heard about him, but they don't like him. They don't believe in him. Maybe famous people, important people, perhaps some of our friends have had that happen to them. And very often, a bit like these people in the story, it's not that they can't believe, as if they've assessed every bit of evidence and they've weighed it up carefully. It's that they won't believe. Very often, it's just that they don't want to. And we need to understand that, children, because it is a very sad thing when it happens and it's upsetting, but we need to know that we don't need to be unsettled by that. It's not that there's something wrong with Jesus. It's not that there's something wrong with the gospel message. It's actually because there is something wrong with us as human beings, and very often we don't want to admit what is wrong. So don't be unsettled or thrown by it. Okay, we are now going to sing again. We're going to celebrate once more the risen conquering Son and the great victory that over death he's won. Let's stand and sing together. Do you grab a seat? We're going to have part 3 of our reading, the final part, and this is the climax. Again, you can look on the screens, on the sheets, or you can watch along. Let me read Matthew 28 from verse 16. The 11 disciples went to the hill in Galilee where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, even though some of them doubted. Jesus drew near and said to them,
I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Go then to all peoples everywhere and make them my disciples. Baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And teach them to obey everything I have commanded you. And I'll be with you always to the end of the age.
Thank you, actors. So this is the final part, and these verses are actually the focal point, the climax, the highlight of the whole chapter. Right from the beginning of this chapter, we have been waiting to get to Galilee. It's all been pointing forward to what's going to happen in Galilee. So back in verse 7, The angel says, Jesus is risen, go to Galilee. Then we get a bit further on, verse 10. They meet Jesus and he says, I am risen, go to Galilee. And now at last in our section, we get there. We are in Galilee and we're waiting with bated breath. What is going to happen? This is the climax. And the first thing that happens is worship. Sorry, this is a bit blurry. That's my fault. I can't get a crisper image. Let me read from verse 16. The 11 disciples went to the hill in Galilee where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw Jesus, and we saw James flat on his face, they worshipped him, even though some of them doubted. So at last, the disciples, or most of them, recognize who Jesus is, that he really is the Lord. No, he really is the Son of God, the God-man, and they fall down and they worship Jesus. Now, in this picture, there's just one of them kind of gently kneeling. I'm told it's much more likely from the language that they were actually flat on their faces like James was in worship of Jesus. And children, you know the Bible's pretty strict on who it's okay to worship and who it's not. They get that Jesus is worthy of worship as our divine creator. If you know the Christmas story, many of us will know that the wise men got what this point right at the beginning of the story. As soon as they saw the baby Jesus or the infant, the toddler Jesus, they worshipped him. And right at the beginning of the story, Matthew has told us that this baby was Emmanuel, God with us. And yet it's taken us all the way to Jesus' miracles, death, resurrection, before the disciples at last catch up and get it. And they say, Jesus is Lord. We are to worship him. And they're showing us the right response. But actually, even worship isn't really where this chapter is heading, is it? It's not the ultimate end, because the real climax of this chapter, and indeed the climax of Matthew's whole book, is this. Jesus, the Son of God, the one who deserves all worship from us, he wants the whole world to receive the truth about him beating death. So children, on your sheets, you're going to have to fill in some gaps, and you can fill it in. Jesus wants the whole world to receive the truth. So what Jesus does is he gathers round him his disciples on the mountain, and he says this, do you remember? Jono said, I have been given, verse 18, all authority in heaven and on earth. We are used to it because we heard about Jesus in this verse before, but that is an extraordinary claim Jesus is making. It's an enormous thing for a human being to say. Children, there's a picture there. Can anyone put a hand up and tell me who that is? Jemima. Yeah, it's the Queen. For a bonus point, can anyone make a guess when that is in the Queen's life? You can tell she looks a bit younger than she does today. Yes. Yes, I think, I can't tell you the exact date, but yeah, and there's a very special thing that happened on that day. There's a clue on top of her head. That was a really good answer. Any others? Ella. She just got crowned. She just got made queen. So this is a very special day, and she is holding something very special in her hand. I don't expect many people would know, but if you do know, stick a hand up. There's a hand. Cleo, I don't think you do know, but it's called the orb. Is that what you're going to say? The orb. And if you are a geek, you know it's this orb is called the Sovereign's Orb. This is what it looks like. It's a gold ball. And the ball there represents, have a guess? Yeah. The world. The ball represents the world. The cross represents, Ella? Jesus. So actually, just at that moment when the Queen is being given authority over the United Kingdom and a few other places as well, she holds this very special thing, which is a reminder to her that Jesus is the one who has all authority over the whole earth. It's a very useful thing for monarchs to remember at that moment, that Jesus is the true ruler. And it's this Jesus, this Son of God, who has all authority, who's in charge of everything, who now wants the whole world to receive the news that he has beaten death. And now that anyone in the world, whatever our background, whatever we've done, anyone can now enter his kingdom and enjoy eternal life. And Jesus' final command in these verses, we saw it in verse 19, is this. It's actually a word. Can anyone just shout what the word is? Yeah, Flora. Go. So in those verses, Jesus says, go. Perhaps the disciples, they might have wanted to stick around. It's a lovely time hanging out with Jesus on the mountain. Jesus says, yeah, it might be comfortable, it might be safe, but you've got to go. You've got to go. You've got to go into the valley below. You've got to share the good news about me with others. And I, for one, am very grateful that they obeyed. Otherwise, none of us here would possibly know this news. They went with this news and told people. And actually, this is Jesus' command to his church in every age. We are called not just to stay in church, have a nice time, enjoying each other's company all day long, but we are called to go. We're called to share what we have received and be generous with it. So Matthew's gospel ends in a strange way. It doesn't end as some of our favorite stories do, with a happily ever after. It actually ends with a kind of non-end. It's open-ended. The story isn't really finished at the end of Matthew's gospel. And that is because this is the point in the story where you and I are invited to join in. We get to be involved in the next part of the story and try and be involved in bringing it to the close by being those who take the good news to others. So as we finish, children, we have been thinking today about what an incredible day that first Easter is. Really fabulous news, the best news ever, that death has been beaten. There's nothing in our lives that a good resurrection will not fix. This is wonderful news for all of us. And yet we've also seen that this is news which is not just to be enjoyed. I hope we do enjoy it. I hope we delight in it today. But it's also news to be shared with others. And the last sentence of the book, Jesus promises that even though that might be a hard thing for us to do, he will promise to be with us as we do that. Children, you've done very well. We're now going to have our prayers, and Janice is going to come up and lead us in prayer. So let's put our hands together, eyes closed, and we'll pray.